All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world, and happy Wednesday, everybody. Today is July 8th, 2026. And our top story this morning, things have escalated in the Middle East once again. This seems like a more severe escalation than some of the prior taco episodes. I know that word is getting thrown around an awful lot lately. So what happened? We talked yesterday during the stream about how two tankers had been hit in the Strait of Hormuz. Those tankers had been using the U.S. Approved route that's closer to Oman in the Strait of Hormuz, as opposed to the Iran-controlled and sponsored route to the north, where they're going to be charging a toll after the 60-day period was over. It turned out they hit three ships. A third ship was hit. Notably, it took a while for the UK MTO to come out with the news release about that third ship being hit. I wonder why that was. But in response to that, the United States revoked the sanctions waiver that had allowed Iran to export some 60 million barrels of oil since the MOU was signed. Most of that had gone to China. Most of it was going to China before the war anyway. But the sanctions are back. That's what has basically come out of this. Not only are the sanctions back, but the United States then began striking IRGC targets in and around Iran, especially in coastal areas. The Bandar Abbas Naval Base was hit once again. Iran then retaliated, launching missiles and drones against U.S. bases in Bahrain and Kuwait. And then, of course, President Trump, about 4 o'clock in the morning Eastern time overnight, basically said the Iran ceasefire is over, along with a lot of other Trump-isms like, oh, these people are scum, you can't negotiate with them, and a whole bunch of stuff about Spain for some reason. Market reacted very strongly to that. We've got stocks are down significantly. Oil did rally a little bit. We saw as high as 75 and change overnight. Now we're back to mid-73 range as of the recording of this video. Oil continues to underreact to escalations in the Middle East. Now, it's hard to tell. This one's a little different because we're doing this midweek. And, you know, the running joke, and the reason why it's a joke is because it's been true. The running joke has been we have our wars on weekends, right? The escalations happen on Friday. We get a peace deal by Sunday night just in time for the futures to start trading down. We're doing this midweek here. This is new. I really don't know what this one looks like, but most people think taco is on the menu by Sunday. We'll see if this one is any different. Now, also going on big news this morning, Zentoshin. Never heard of this company until today. Zentoshin was it's a Japanese payments processor that has collapsed and filed for bankruptcy. Now the worry is about Japanese banks and restaurants. This is interesting. They only had $710 million in liabilities. Not a huge firm, but it is the biggest bankruptcy in Japan this year. The company is accused of falsifying credit card accounts for over 20 years. Not a lot of detail on what specifics of the fraud here, but apparently they were granting credit card terminals to merchants in violation of the law, lying about who these merchants were. I don't know a lot about the fraud itself, but I do know that according to this article, some 200,000 merchants in Japan use its credit card terminals that have effectively been bricked by the collapse of the company. And so those 200,000 merchants are no longer able to take credit cards. They're basically cash-only businesses now. Who did they owe money to? How much fallout will there be in the banks? So I think we'll probably be hearing more about this one in the days ahead. We've also got the Kospi Show is going once again this morning. South Korean stocks have officially entered a bear market, down 22% from their highs. Still up more than 100% for the year, but the index fell 5.3% yesterday as the AI trade continues to waver. South Korean stocks are getting very volatile. When's the last time we had a day without a 5% move in the South Korean indexes? And again, when you hear South Korean index, you have to keep in mind that is basically Samsung and SK Hynix because they make up more than half of the index in South Korea now. Talk about concentration risk. We've got AI debt, though, continues to flood the market. This time, it's Amazon with a $25 billion bond offering. However, demand was just 1.6 times the deal size. Now, you might be saying, oh, we're oversubscribed. More people want them than there is debt to go around. Yeah, that's true. But the typical bond deal for tech debt this year has been 4x oversubscribed. So investors don't have much appetite for this stuff because they're just issuing too much of it. Big tech is borrowing too much money to build data centers that nobody needs or wants. But remember, you know, I've only been warning about this for 3.5 years. What's a few more days? This was an interesting story yesterday. A building in New York City was on the brink of collapse. Those worries appear to have somewhat ebbed this morning after they've shored up this building. The former Pfizer headquarters in New York City, you had I-beams were caving in, floors were sagging, bricks and windows falling from the building. This was an office to residential conversion. Now, I remember we talk a lot about commercial real estate on this channel, and every time there's some guy in the comments who says it's simple, just convert office buildings into apartments. It sounds easy enough. It's actually really hard, especially when you try to add 16 floors to an existing building without beefing up the supports underneath it. That's actually a big no-no in structural engineering. And I don't know what they're going to do with this building now. I suspect we'll also be hearing more about this one in the days ahead. We got a lot of auto news today as well. Chinese auto sales, get this, down 23% year over year. Nearly a quarter decline in the rate of car sales in China. This is the property crisis front and center here. People feel less wealthy and they're buying fewer cars in China. Now, remember over the last few weeks or the last few days, I've been saying, I don't get the oil market. Where did this supply glut come from? Why was oil so cheap before the ceasefire went away anyway? And I said, has there been some massive demand destruction somewhere that we haven't seen yet? And I keep saying China, China. Well, and I also said yesterday that it should be showing up somewhere else. You can't have this much oil demand destruction without other statistics reflecting the data. And then today we've got Chinese auto sales down 23% year over year. However, the Chinese have made up for it because exports, auto exports, up 150%. China is dumping overproduced, mass-produced EVs that were made basically at a loss. They're dumping it into overseas markets, trying to capture market share, and it is taking its toll on rival automakers. Case in point, Mercedes, their total sales dropped 8% year over year. In particular, China sales of Mercedes down 30% year over year. European automakers are not doing well. U.S. automakers, not so much better. Rivian is diluting the heck out of its shareholders. This story broke actually late Monday. They're issuing 75 million new shares to the tune of about $1.5 billion. And Rivian stock took a dive yesterday on that news. And last but not least, we've got to wrap up the show with private credit, don't we? HSBC is cutting back on its risky private credit lending after taking a $400 million loss due to the collapse of Market Financial Solutions. You may recall Market Financial Solutions. I did a video about that one. They were doing mortgage fraud in freaking Bangladesh and then issuing mortgages in the UK to cover those non-existent Bangladeshi homes. Those people actually thought they were signing up for COVID stimulus. Turns out they were signing up for mortgages, even though the documents were written in English and they didn't speak English. Oh, that's kind of nice. And that didn't stop U.S. banks from lending money to Market Financial Solutions to enable the whole thing. Yeah, now HSBC wants to pull back some of their risky private credit lending. All right, better late than never, I guess. Guys, there's a lot going on today. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget the like button and all that other algorithmic goodness, like the subscribe button if you're new here. So you can come back and have your coffee with the Melonheads tomorrow because we do this every day. Right now, the S&P 500 is in the red by 43 points or 0.57% lower. We are off the lows of the morning. And of course, you're probably noticing this big dive that happened at roughly 4:15 a.m. Eastern time while most of us were sleeping. Yeah, that was President Trump saying the ceasefire is effectively over. Market did not like that. The Dow is also down 510 points, 0.96%. Again, most of that coming after 4:15 a.m. Eastern time with Trump's interview in Turkey. And the NASDAQ is off by 226 points, 0.78% lower. Again, big dive at 4 in the morning after President Trump said the ceasefire was over. The Dixie is higher again this morning, stronger dollar, up by 10 basis points, 101.19. Looking over at the bond market, we've got higher yields. That is being driven mostly by higher oil prices this morning. The 30-year yield is at 5.069, higher by 2.5 points. The 10-year yield is higher by 4 points at 4.571. The 2 years at 4.201, that's higher by 4 basis points. And the 1 month is lower by a fraction of a point at 3.639. Let's take a look at the chart of the 10-year Treasury yield, 4.569, 4.57-ish here. I just want to zero in on this red line here that we are now back above it. We tried to break above this a couple of weeks ago in May. We failed, and we have since fallen. Now, what is that line telling us? We've got to switch to weekly candles, and we got to zoom way out on the chart, and then we can kind of start to see what's going on here. This little pennant pattern is what we are breaking out from here, or at least attempting to break out from here. We had a big increase in interest rates starting in 2021 through 2023. Since then, we've been consolidating. I believe we are getting ready to head sharply higher, as I believe we are in a new 40-year phase of consistently higher interest rates, contrary to the prior 40 years, going all the way back to the inflation of the late 70s, that saw consistently lower rates. And before that, the prior 40 years of that, that saw consistently higher rates in the aftermath of World War II. This is actually a 40-year span here. The chart gets compressed before the 1980s. So yeah, I think we're looking at consistently higher rates for the years to come. I think nobody in finance is prepared for that because nobody was alive the last time we had a consistently higher period of interest rates. And well, we could be getting there. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got spot gold is lower by $33 this morning, $4,073 for spot gold. That's off by 0.8%. Stronger dollar, higher interest rates. Gold does not like that. Silver is also taking it on the chin this morning, down $1.33 or about 2.2% lower at $58.63. I still like the shiny, but it's going to be a rough day for the metals, especially if oil prices keep climbing. Copper is lower by 2%, platinum lower by 4.5%, palladium lower by 4.8%, and crude oil is up by 5%, just below $74 a barrel this morning. We'll look at the oil chart in just a few minutes, higher by $3.50. Bitcoin not looking so good this morning, off by another $1,464. Again, the Bitcoin chart is rolling over, and I think we are heading to a new low for the cycle here. Beware, all you sailor bros. We've got a couple more months of winter ahead. But here is the big news this morning. Oil surges after Trump says U.S. ceasefire with Iran is over. And, well, the ceasefire was kind of a joke to begin with, wasn't it, folks? Because we've been shooting at each other the whole freaking time. We forgot to cease the fire when we made the ceasefire, but I digress. Oil jumped after U.S. President Trump said the tentative ceasefire with Iran is over, raising the prospect of a fresh round of conflict in one of the world's most important energy-producing regions. We didn't raise the prospect, guys. The missiles are flying as we speak. All right, that prospect was raised a long time ago. The conflict is back on. Brent futures rose more than 6% in London, while West Texas Intermediate also leaped higher. The president made the remarks at a press conference in Ankara, adding that he didn't want to deal with Iran anymore. He also said that he would continue to let his negotiators talk to their counterparts from Tehran, though he thought they were wasting their time. Overnight, U.S. forces completed strikes on more than 80 targets after Iran launched a series of attacks on merchant ships a day earlier. Those three incidents targeting a Qatari LNG gas carrier and two large oil tankers marked the biggest day of attacks since an interim peace deal came into effect in June. Before the strikes, the U.S. Treasury revoked the sanctions waiver that had allowed Tehran to sell oil, reversing course on a key part of the interim peace deal with the Islamic Republic. The agreement to lift sanctions on Iran saw millions of barrels of the country's crude flood out of the Persian Gulf in recent weeks. Much of that supply is now in limbo. The spike in futures comes against the backdrop of a market that had been wagering on lower prices. Speculators have been holding a large short position in Brent futures and have shed net bullish wagers at the fastest pace since the pandemic in 2020 in recent weeks as Hormuz reopened. On Tuesday morning, a handful of oil carriers still appeared to be transiting Hormuz, though other ships turned around midway through the crossing. All right, so we're back to chaos in the Strait this morning. Here's looking at the price of oil. We are currently sitting just below $74 a barrel. And also importantly, just below the 200-day moving average shown in red there. Oil prices, all things considered, are pretty low here, but they have risen rather dramatically in the last 2 days. Again, I know we're going to see it in the comments. This is all probably building up to another round of taco. Hey, this one feels a little different. It feels a little more severe. We're hitting back. We're hitting this Bandar Abbas base again. That's the naval base where the IRGC launches most of their little speedboats from. But we continue to be unwilling to hit the Iranians where it will hurt. And by hit them where it'll hurt, I mean blow up Karg Island, which is where Iran exports 90% of their oil from. For whatever reason, lower oil prices, President Trump refuses to hit that target, either capture or destroy Karg Island. I would prefer they just destroy it, because I think if the Marines try to capture it, they're going to have drones landing on their heads. And I would rather not have Americans dying to protect Iranian infrastructure. I'd rather just blow it up and let the Iranians fend for themselves. But hey, that's just me. We'll see what happens, guys. For now, tacos in the oven. And the other big one this morning, Japan payment processor collapse hits banks and restaurants. The bankruptcy of Zentoshin, an Osaka-based credit card payment processor, threatens both the regional banks which funded it, as well as the small and medium-sized restaurants that relied on its services. Zentoshin filed for bankruptcy with the Osaka District Court on July 6th, according to Teikoku Data Bank, Japan's largest private corporate credit research firm. The company had total liabilities of approximately 115.2 billion yen. That's about $710 million U.S. at the time of the filing, making it Japan's largest corporate bankruptcy of the year. Five listed regional banks and banking groups, including Towo Bank and the Sanju San Financial Group, have said they will take write-downs because of the failure. The company's collapse was triggered by difficulty securing additional financing following allegations of employee misconduct 2 years ago. That's a bit of an understatement. It was not just employee misconduct 2 years ago. Zentoshin turned to crowdfunding to sustain its operations. Okay, since when do payment processors use GoFundMe to finance their business operations? But I digress. Nevertheless, many of Zentoshin's lending banks had classified their loans to the company as performing assets, meaning the impact on earnings will be significant, according to people familiar with the matter. Shares in regional banks tumbled. Towo Bank said it would write off the entire 5.9 billion yen portion of its 8 billion in loans that is not covered by collateral or loan loss reserves during the fiscal year ended March 2027. The bank is currently forecasting net income of 5.5 billion yen for the year, implying the write-off would push it into a net loss. The bank said it's reviewing its full-year earnings forecast. Zentoshin served about 200,000 shops, according to its website. Many of these merchants are small restaurants and retailers with limited cash flow flexibility that depend on early payments, according to Osamu Naito, a manager at Teikoku Data Bank's Osaka branch. If they do not receive sale proceeds that would otherwise have been remitted through Zentoshin, some businesses could face serious threats to their financial stability. In addition, merchants using Zentoshin's card terminals will no longer be able to accept cashless payments until they secure alternative payment systems. We are concerned not only about the impact on financial institutions, but also about the risk of secondary bankruptcies among restaurants and retailers, Naito said, warning that the failure could trigger a broader chain of business collapse. Zentoshin may have been falsifying accounts for 20 years or more, according to a report published Wednesday by credit analysis company Tokyo Shoko Research. Zentoshin was unavailable for comment. So it's those secondary bankruptcies that you got to worry about. 200,000 merchants plus several regional banks are going to be taking losses from this one. We don't know how big yet. We don't know how big the fraud was. Perhaps a sign of the times, rising interest rates, people with tide going out, you start to find out who's been swimming naked. All right, now back to the Kospi Show. AI rotation trade sends Korean stocks tumbling and China surging. That's interesting because China has been lagging the rest of the world for most of this year, but now it's benefiting. The AI rotation trade is gathering pace in Asia as investors pull money from the chip makers that powered this year's rally and hunt for cheaper ways to play the technology boom. The shift pushed the Kospi index to a technical bear market after gains that made it the world's best performing major benchmark in 2026. At the same time, the Hang Seng China Enterprise Index climbed as much as 4.5%. Its biggest advance since April of 2025. For much of this year, investors crowded into South Korea and Taiwan, betting that an explosion in AI demand would benefit chipmakers such as SK Hynix and Samsung. But as the rally extends and questions emerge over whether the spending boom can be sustained, money is beginning to rotate into one of Asia's most unloved markets. Alibaba jumped more than 13% in Hong Kong and Tencent rose over 4%. The AI-led rally in Korea and Taiwan may be showing signs of fatigue, though it still seems premature to call for a major correction, said Gerald Gann, who apparently didn't notice we're down 22% from the highs. But yes, Gerald goes on. He's the CIO at Reed Capital. Nevertheless, investors are increasingly aware of the concentration risk in their portfolios, making this a sensible juncture to rebalance exposures. The move gathered momentum after Reuters reported that China's DeepSeek is developing its own chip to help power AI systems, while the information said Xipu is considering designing its own AI chip due to increasing demand and U.S. export controls. Melonhead Inc. is also considering designing its own AI chip. I'm going to take the company public at a $5 billion valuation because why not? Local media cited Alibaba's upbeat earnings preview with analysts as a driver for that stock. All right, so people are selling Korea and buying China this morning. Again, the volatility in the Korean indexes, 5% moves daily, up or down, down another 5.35% yesterday, now down 22% from the highs that we saw just at the end of June. More volatility ahead. And keep an eye on the debt market, guys, because that's where things will really blow up when this AI bubble bursts. Amazon's new bonds get cooler reception as AI debt floods the market. When Amazon sold its biggest ever bond earlier this year, it was inundated with investor orders amid hype about the AI boom. This time around, there's less fanfare. After demand for the $25 billion bond offering peaked at $62 billion on Tuesday, orders were pared to about $41 billion once the banks managing the transaction trimmed the final spread offered to investors, according to people familiar with the matter. That means demand settled at just 1.6 times the deal size. To put that in perspective, U.S. high-grade corporate deals have seen orders average around 4 times their size this year, Bloomberg compiled data shows. The softer demand came even as Amazon offered elevated new issue concessions, a premium to where its existing debt trades, that were several times more than those typically seen the last few months, the data showed. So Amazon had to sweeten the pot, and they still had very lax appetite for these bonds. It signals there's a limit to the amount of money sloshing around for debt of even the highest rated hyperscalers. As Amazon ramps up spending on AI infrastructure, the deal bought its bond issuance over the past year to about $107 billion, the most of any big tech company during that period. See, this is crazy. Not only have these companies completely obliterated their once glorious free cash flow, they have burned all of that. On top of that, they've gone over $100 billion in debt, all to build these data centers that have not produced one penny of earnings for anyone. It's so important. The only people making money are the hardware manufacturers. Everybody else in the AI space, including the hyperscalers, is losing money on these data centers. Investors are still showing up, but the hysteria from the earlier wave of hyperscaler debt has clearly faded, said Tony Shinka, a portfolio manager at Impax Asset Management. Wider concessions were needed to price this deal. So there is less and less demand for these bonds to build data centers, even though the companies just keep issuing more and more of them. Meanwhile, New York, there was some drama in New York City yesterday. NYC building deemed stable enough to lift some evacuation orders. This building was evacuated and 7 adjacent buildings were evacuated yesterday. An under construction Manhattan high rise at risk of collapse was stabilized late Tuesday and some evacuations of nearby buildings were lifted. We've been monitoring the building for many hours and have not seen any movement, said Ahmed Tighani, commissioner of the New York City Department of Buildings, during a news conference on Tuesday. By nighttime, residents were allowed back into several of the 7 buildings that were evacuated as a precaution. The scene unfolded after columns were spotted buckling on Tuesday morning at the 1970s-era building, which is being converted into luxury apartments. Construction workers at the site and people in nearby buildings, including a school, diplomatic offices, and several hotels in the busy quarter of Midtown, were rushed out after firefighters were called there around 8 a.m., Mayor Zohran Mamdani described it as an extremely serious situation. City officials going floor by floor later found no additional movement of the damaged columns, giving on-site contractors the green light to move forward with emergency repairs. On Tuesday evening, workers could be seen shoring up the damage inside the gleaming glass and steel high-rise. Guys, there's images and video on Twitter. It looks really bad inside this building. Steel girders completely buckled, some snapped in half. With more than 1,600 units, the developers say the project is the largest office-to-residential conversion in the city's history. Gensler, the architectural firm leading the project, says on its website that it is transforming a pair of 1970s-era office buildings by adding more than a dozen stories and redesigning an adjoining tower. Science says when you put 16 floors of additional weight on a building, you should probably beef up the supports underneath. Mechanical engineer, I know a little bit about this stuff. Building department records show the project has been fined by the city for several safety violations, including glass and metal falling off the building, along with an incident where a worker fell off a ladder. Spokespersons for Gensler and Metro Loft, the project developer, didn't return messages for comment. But in a statement to the New York Times, Metro Loft stressed that the building itself is not at risk of collapse and that no debris fell from the building. I'm not sure that's actually correct. Nathan Berman, founder of Metro Loft, told the Wall Street Journal that the added weight from widening the top 15 or so floors of the building likely caused the damage. Two columns that buckled may not have been properly reinforced, he told the newspaper. It was a little more than two columns buckling, if you go look at that video. Why those particular two columns and nothing else, we don't know. We're investigating that. Gee, you think it might be the many thousands of tons of weight you're putting on top of it? He maintained the building's integrity wasn't compromised. Yes, it was. Oh, my God. Where do they get this stuff? 95% of the building, the structure is sound and intact, Berman told the Journal. There is no way that this corner of a small extension all of a sudden topples this building. Yes, 95% of the building is intact. It reminds me of, you know, whenever the wife is out and, you know, I'm home with the kids and she calls, I'll always say, oh, honey, good news. Half of the house is completely untouched by the fire. Yeah, 95% of the building did not buckle and collapse. All right. Ever the optimist. You know, I get it. We're a little negative on this channel, right? We do the bear thing here quite a bit. This is buy-side research predominantly. There's nothing but sell-side on TV. If you want cheerleading, grab your pom-poms and go ahead and flip on the TV. But holy crap, 95% of the building isn't buckling. Okay, that's taking optimism to a whole new level there. Good luck with that one, guys. All right, let's talk about the auto sector in China now. China's auto sales drop even as exports help cushion the slump. China's passenger car market contracted again in June, with data showing a widening split between domestic demand and surging overseas shipments. Retail sales of passenger vehicles fell 23.2% from a year before to 1.6 million units, China's Passenger Car Association said on Wednesday. New energy vehicles, including plug-in hybrids and pure electric vehicles, slipped 9% year over year, though the segment still accounted for over 60% of the market for a third straight month. All right, that's dreadful. 23.2% year over year decline in passenger vehicles. All right, that is just catastrophic. The average Chinese consumer is really struggling with this housing collapse, is what that data tells me. Manufacturers leaned heavily on exports to offset the slowdown. Exports of new energy vehicles surged over 150% to 499,000 units, signaling that foreign markets are absorbing excess production. Despite a 1/5 drop in domestic sales, BYD's total shipments rose 5.5%, driven by exports that almost doubled from a year ago. All right, so we talked about this like middle of last year, how the Chinese government was cracking down on the price wars among auto producers, that they were building way too many cars. They weren't paying any of their suppliers. So now what those Chinese auto dealers are doing is they're dumping those cars that they produced at a loss. They're dumping them into foreign markets. All right. Now, while that's happening, yeah, their exports are way up because they're selling these cars at a loss. But at the same time, domestically, the car market is just absolutely in the toilet here. 23% decline. And I keep saying, man, how is China able to reduce their oil imports by so much? And yeah, I'm sure the burning down of reserves is contributing heavily to that. But at the same time, maybe, just maybe, a 23% decline in car sales is resulting in a little bit of demand destruction within China as well. And you can see it in Mercedes numbers as well. Mercedes-Benz car sales decline on worsening China slump. This one out late yesterday. Mercedes-Benz car sales fell in the second quarter due to accelerating weakness in China, where a property crisis is stifling demand for luxury vehicles. The German company's global deliveries dropped 8% compared with the same period last year. Sales in China, where competition from local manufacturers is intensifying, slumped 30%. So Mercedes really taking it on the chin in China. Now, Mercedes performed notably better outside Asia. The company's North American sales jumped 13% despite import tariffs in the lucrative market. That's the upper K of the U.S. K-shaped economy there. Mercedes are selling well, Nissan's not so much. Deliveries of fully electric models surged 51%, driven by strong demand in Europe. So that's interesting. Even though the EV bubble did largely burst last year, the war in Iran, the higher oil prices, and continued political efforts to electrify in Europe are continuing to drive EV sales in Europe. A 51% surge in EV models in Europe for Mercedes, although that can't, not enough to offset what's happening in China. And speaking of EVs, Rivian shares fall after public offering plan overshadows upbeat revenue forecast. Shares of Rivian slipped 9% in extended trading on Monday. They were actually down about 18% yesterday after the electric vehicle maker launched an offer to sell 75 million shares, even as it forecasts second quarter revenue above analyst estimates. Based on Monday's close of $20.14 per Rivian share, the company would raise $1.5 billion. Rivian said in a filing that it plans to use the proceeds to fund equity contributions as part of a loan agreement with the U.S. Department of Energy. The offering comes as Rivian, known for its high-end SUVs and R1T pickups, is ramping up rollout of its smaller, more affordable R2 SUVs, seen as critical for the company's success. In April, Rivian said it would obtain a smaller but quicker $4.5 billion loan from the government to fund building and equipping its Georgia plant, which will house expanded production of R2 SUVs. It plans to start drawing the loan early next year. And Rivian got absolutely clobbered yesterday because of it, down about 18% yesterday after news of that dilution. It's down another 5% today, trading at $15.68. It's only down about 85% since its IPO. Yikes. Again, there's the EV bubble in all of its glory, and this one looks a lot like a lot of those SPAC companies did. But year-to-date, it's down about 16%. Almost all of the year-to-date losses happening in the last 48 hours or so. Up until Monday, things were going pretty well for Rivian. It was at least flat on the year, and not so much anymore. And last but not least, let's talk private credit to wrap up the show. HSBC reins in riskier private credit lending. Better late than never. That's according to the Financial Times. HSBC is pulling back from riskier private credit lending, becoming the latest bank to rein in exposure to the sector after a string of high-profile bankruptcies raised concern over underwriting standards, the Financial Times reported on Tuesday. The bank has told some clients it will not renew their lending facilities after deciding to stop lending to private credit funds that did not offer sufficient returns to justify the risk, the report said, citing three people familiar with the matter. It will instead focus on lower risk private credit funds, whatever those are. Exposure to private credit lending has troubled Europe's biggest lender and added to the market jitters around the sector. HSBC in May took a $400 million hit linked to the collapse of British mortgage lender Market Financial Solutions. So we've got banks who are already up to their eyeballs in private credit lending are saying, yeah, maybe now's a good time to stop lending to private credit. No, the time to stop lending to them was, well, to not lend to them in the first place. That was the time to stop lending to them. Now, yeah, sure. The best time was yesterday. The second best time is today. Things continuing to get worse in private credit. We'll see. You know what? That Japan, that Zentoshin story, it's not a private credit story, at least not yet. Wouldn't be surprised to see that one spill over into the private credit space. Call that one just a hunch. Anyways, guys, that's all we got for you today. I want to say thank you very much for having your coffee with the Melon Heads. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for you new guys. See you guys all tomorrow. Thank you very much to my magnanimous Melon Head supporters on Patreon, YouTube, and Buy Me a Coffee for supporting the channel. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.